Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 Nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile Testing Center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 Nurse or 221-1111. Cash prize for antibody testing, $50.
For the lighter side of local news, Recording Library of West Texas brings you the Lifestyle Show. Features from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll feature fun local stories about people in our community, plus columns such as gardening and food. The Lifestyle Show, Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7:30 and Thursdays at 4:30 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 35 and clear. Tonight clear with a low in the low 50s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night clear with a low in the mid 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, January 30th. Executive Outlook. Tight oil expected to grow again, but at slower pace. The story was written by Mella McEwen. After posting incredible growth for a decade and then falling last year amid the oil market crash, U.S. tight oil will resume its growth trajectory again. Quote, however, we think it will take a couple of years of decline, said Ben Shattuck, Research Director for American Upstream Oil and Gas at Wood Mackenzie. Participating in Hart Energy's virtual executive oil conference this week, Shattuck said that during that 2 years of decline, the industry needs to right-size and repair its completion model and position themselves to grow again when oil prices are right. Even when tight sands oil production resumes its growth, quote, not even under the most bullish scenario do we envision a situation where it is growing by 1 million barrels a day each year. In fact, we think it will grow just over 1 million barrels a day over the next decade, he said. Part of the reason he expects production to decline over the next 2 years is fiscal discipline by operators living within cash flow and focusing on generating free cash to return to shareholders. Quote, early on, companies were benchmarked by how many acres they had. Following that, it was how big each well was completed, and it very much became an exercise in how quickly a company could grow production. That's why we saw outperformance in terms of crude production. In today's metrics, companies are benchmarked and will be for the foreseeable future on their ability to generate cash, end quote. That period of declining production will be very much a period of companies right-sizing their balance sheet, he said. For at least the next 5 years, he said operators will have to decide whether the cash generated by higher oil prices should be returned to shareholders or spent on additional development. Shattuck also forecasts a continued wave of consolidation. With the recent mergers involving Permian companies, Chevron Noble, Devon WPS, ConocoPhillips Contra Resources, Pioneer Natural Resources Parsley Energy, and Diamondback QEP Resources and Guyton Energy, 60% of sub-$50 Permian tight oil resources are now held by five of the biggest companies with the most robust financial health. That consolidation does make life a little more difficult for smaller producers, he acknowledged. While the wave of consolidations may be uncomfortable for the industry, quote, long term it represents upside, it represents expansion, it represents stability, more predictability for the markets, and will be easier for midstream companies to plan, he said. Energy analyst says, I see recovery coming this year. The story was written by Mella McEwen. As disruptive events go, last year's combination of the COVID-19 pandemic and associated oil market crash certainly rank as one of the dramatic events Tom Petry has seen in his career. Participating in Hart Energy's virtual executive oil conference, Petry, chairman of Petry Partners, said the industry is getting back to something like the old normal, quote, but we're not there yet, end quote. His forecast shows a modest recovery in drilling activity that will be limited largely by operators focused more on returning capital to shareholders than on an aggressive drilling program. That is part of what he called the self-correcting forces now at work. Coming into the new year, he said the worst-case scenario was for oil prices ranging from low 40s to high 50s, even $60. But the scenario continues to improve, and he said his best guess now is for oil prices in the mid-40s to mid-50s. Quote, I see recovery coming this year, Petry said. I do believe we're headed toward a new normal, but it will probably take more than this year to get to the peak benefit of it, end quote. He sees the beginning of progress in 2022 that will gain momentum in 2023-2024. Quote, I don't think we need to establish confidence in long-term oil and natural gas pricing and predictability. We do need to see the benefits of scale coming from the consolidation wave and Chapter 11 filings now underway. That's been underway for over a year and is beginning to show up. I think we're going to be looking to see the capital discipline exhibited by the industry this time around that was lacking over the last decade, and see if capital allocators have learned their lesson for when they took their eye off the ball, he said. Petry does see challenges ahead, beginning with President Biden putting the nation back into the Paris Climate Agreement. Quote, I suspect it will not be quite the same path in trying to get back into the agreement that he anticipates, he observed. Continuing the quote, he'll find out there's high expectations, particularly for the U.S. to be leading participation. Biden wants to do that, but the price of doing that is something he is going to have to take account of. There are things that could impair the economic recovery and job growth by rejoining, end quote. Then there is what he called the new form of geopolitical normal that now includes Israel, thanks to the normalization of relations with several Arab countries. It also includes Iran and Biden's hopes of getting that country back to the negotiating table on its nuclear ambitions, which could impact the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia and could tilt Saudi Arabia into multilateral relations with China and Russia in addition to the U.S. Turkey's involvement in ending Libya's civil war also has it in the geopolitical mix, Petry said. Dominant among the challenges facing the industry is the new administration's focus on climate and its decarbonization initiatives, desired progress on renewables, recognition of and addressing global energy poverty, and mitigating the disruptive changes of some of those strategies. The rise of natural gas as a large-scale source of energy when renewables like wind and solar fail because the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing offers opportunities for traditional oil and gas companies to make a difference, he said. Quote, Despite the ongoing geopolitical and climate change uncertainty, there remains a clear need for natural gas to play a constructive, even transformative role in a lower carbon energy world, Petry said. Slow M&A market ended 2020 with Permian bang. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Wheeling and dealing in the upstream oil and gas sector was slow in 2020, gaining momentum later in the year thanks to some significant Permian-related deals. John Dormer, managing partner at Anderson King Energy Consultants, LLC, said there were only 29 deals totaling just less than $50 billion. Of those, 12 were corporate acquisitions, 12 were asset deals, and 5 were royalty VPP, or volumetric production payment deals. Quote, Chevron Noble, Devon WPX, ConocoPhillips Concho, Pioneer Parsley, and Diamondback QEP and Guyton were the big story of 2020, said Dormer during Hart Energy's virtual executive oil conference. Randy King, managing partner with Anderson King, noted the deals largely involved stock for stock. Only two included modest premiums, and each positioned the combined entity to generate free cash flow to return to shareholders. Quote, I really like these private equity guys taking the opportunity to make public deals, King said. They can take stock back and have, I think, the best of both worlds. They can monetize their position currently, hopefully at a reasonable price. They're not out of the game. They can take equity and get the tax benefits of that, and also get a chance to ride the restoration in stock prices, end quote. Dormer observed that the long-term predictability of the gas shales seemed to attract larger private capital in 2020, avoiding the operational issues seen with oil shales, while offering investors long-term fixed returns. Of the asset transactions, 43% of the total deal value came from 5 Appalachian gas sales. Said King, quote, I had clients for several of the Appalachian gas sales, and we continually lagged behind trying to buy on PDP on the strip using 12 to 15% PW. There seems to be more optimism on longer-lived gas plus the value being placed on future development, end quote. Permian-related deals, once dominant, were light in 2020, he said, quote, If you have Permian assets, you're not selling them voluntarily, said King. He said new tools for projecting the oil shales were desperately needed, along with the opportunity to stabilize future declines through pumping efficiencies, lateral cleanouts, and other flow enhancements that can be a game changer in extending the economic value to what is a large and growing domestic universe of horizontal producing wells. Looking to mergers and acquisitions for 2021, the two agreed private equity firms still have a weak hand for liquidity options. Private capital looking for asset opportunities may have to stretch on valuation parameters, they said. Public companies will be best served finding acquisition targets that deliver deleverage, operating synergies, and high-grade capital opportunities. Finally, they advised, quote, do not be discouraged. The ESG, environment, social, and governance movement may be real, but they are flat wrong in trying to replace fossil fuels. That's going to lead to less supply and higher prices, end quote. Said Dormer, quote, whether you know it or not, you're going to need us, end quote.
The reality of climate change is job destruction. By Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Nancy Pelosi and the media convinced some 80 million to vote against Donald Trump. Now they are finding out what they voted for. Team Biden has halted all new oil and gas leasing on federal lands. This will have a huge impact on states to the west of Texas. Biden carried New Mexico with 4% of the vote. Oil and gas taxes provide a third of the New Mexico's general fund revenue. That revenue supports schools, Medicaid, and public safety. Early estimates are for a hit of $400 million this year and $500 million next year. How will the state of 2.1 million people make up the shortfall? Biden has appointed John Kerry as his special presidential envoy for climate. Translation, Kerry is not accountable to any voter. Kerry owns numerous mansions, a 70-plus foot yacht, and flies around the world in his own jet. Asked about energy workers who now face an end to their livelihoods, he replied, they can work to make solar panels. Sure, just drive over to the store in Roswell displaying the now hiring solar workers sign. The combination of producing wells, stimulation, pipelines, and refineries produces lots of well-paid jobs. This is not the case for solar and wind. Honestly, how many people do you know employed full-time in solar and wind? Ironically, the energy industry now complies with all sorts of complex regulations passed by the John Kerrys of politics, but that is not good enough. It is interesting to see government and industry embarking on plans for which there is no technology. GM announces it will produce only zero emission vehicles by 2035. We lack the battery technology, raw materials, cobalt and such, and electric power grid to support that. Can that change in 14 years? Will Valero become the next Xerox? We promised an update on your new energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, and here it is. While Michigan Governor Granholm also granted $10 million to an electric car battery manufacturer, A123 Systems, in 2009, and lauded the company in a press conference, saying it would help make Michigan the alternative energy capital of North America and the advanced battery capital of the world. A123 Systems, which also received a $249.12 million federal grant by the Obama administration, filed for bankruptcy in 2012. The company is still in operation today as a subsidiary of a Chinese firm, Wangxiang America. Only 2.3 of the 434 projects. Only 2.3% of the 434 projects funded by the Michigan Economic Growth Authority under Granholm's watch were successful in meeting their projected job creation goals, according to the American Energy Alliance. Democrats claimed a border wall would not stop illegal immigration. Yet now they want just that around Washington, D.C., as Pelosi claims the enemy is within. First, you were deplorables. Now you are the enemy. The Economist. The Minimum Wage by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. One idea currently getting a lot of attention is increasing the minimum wage to $15 per hour. A wage floor is an artificial impediment to the smooth functioning of the labor market, but one with some justification. It's complicated. In a country rich in natural capital and human resources, the adoption of a minimum wage is a matter of choice. In making this decision, the U.S. opted, beginning in 1938, not to be globally competitive in certain low-wage sectors, and to build our economy around higher value-added industries. The vast majority of Americans concur with this approach, and the results speak for themselves. The challenge is to get it right. The proponents of a $15 universal minimum wage, who are predominantly well-intentioned but misguided, often cite the notion of a living wage. This concept has merit but ignores salient facts. Slightly over 2% of the workforce and only 1% of full-time workers are paid at or below the minimum wage. Many of these employees are teenagers, retirees supplementing their incomes, or secondary earners. For the economy to work properly, wages must be generally tethered to productivity. There are key sectors, such as hospitality, which could not support an increase of this magnitude. An unfortunate outcome of a $15 minimum wage would be fewer jobs available for those who the measure is designed to help. There are very real problems associated with the working poor, but more than doubling the minimum wage is not the solution. Similarly, there are substantial variations in the industrial compositions, educational levels, and cost structures around the country. A $15 minimum may well be appropriate in some areas, but not all. The Texas economy could not absorb an increase of that magnitude without disruptions. Some level of minimum wage hike may well be warranted. It's been over a decade since the last adjustment. The U.S. raised the federal minimum wage in 2007 to 2009 from $5.15 to $7.25, which seemed to work well and was not an impediment to the recovery from the Great Recession. One reasonable approach could be adjusting to the same level of purchasing power as in 2009, about $8.75. Periodic recalibration helps to assure that the underlying objective is maintained. Different areas of the country could continue to make adjustments compatible with their economic structures and priorities. Finally, as noted, there are valid reasons to reassess the minimum wage, but a stimulus bill is not the proper vehicle. Minimum wage changes are a poor stimulus mechanism. They are diluted and occur only gradually. The purpose of a stimulus package is to immediately juice the economy, and funds should go to individuals and firms that will quickly spend them. As I said, it's complicated. Stay safe.
Hello, this is Michael, reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, January 30th, 2021. Viewpoints. If solving flaring were as easy as selling the gas, everyone would be doing it. By Wayne Christian, Railroad Commission of Texas. I'm one of the primary regulators of energy in the largest energy-producing state in America. I have a duty to the people of Texas to ensure oil and gas production is done responsibly. It is a role I take very seriously. Part of my job is staying informed on current events, industry, and environmental news. Technological innovation and the new data and various studies released about the industry I regulate. For a policy issue as broad and far-reaching as energy, there is a lot of information to evaluate daily. Complicating this task is that most studies are not impartial and are conducted with the intention of proving a point for the person or group financing the report. Unfortunately, these studies are often released and touted as evidence to advance one agenda or another in an endless battle to use government force to pick winners and losers in our energy markets. For example, this week, making the rounds is a report by Rystad Energy stating that oil and gas companies could reduce flaring and venting of natural gas by 40% without costing them a single penny. According to the report, oil and gas companies could, in fact, increase their revenues by $440 million by 2025 if they captured and sold 98% of the casing head gas they produce. If this is true, it would be great news for both the environment and our state's ability to produce cheap, plentiful energy for its citizens. However, I have a feeling the report is too good to be true. If an oil and gas company could make money by selling casing head gas after accounting for its expenses, why wouldn't it? Many of these oil and gas companies are publicly traded, which means they have a legal obligation to increase shareholder value. So if they could make money selling casing head gas, then they would. The fact that they do not says quite a bit. When you dig deeper into the media coverage, the angle becomes much clearer. The report was commissioned by the Environmental Defense Fund with the intention of encouraging my agency, the Railroad Commission of Texas, to adopt a 98% gas capture policy. As the first commissioner in recent history to vote against flaring exceptions, and the commissioner who established a task force to propose solutions to flaring, this is an issue I am working hard to solve. That being said, with the industry on its knees financially due to the demand drop associated with COVID-19, I realize that any changes we make must be done in a way that is thoughtful and deliberate. In the meantime, there has been a dramatic decrease in the volume of flaring over the last year. In August, our agency announced that less than 0.5% of the gas produced in Texas was flared or vented, meaning 99.5% went to beneficial use. Last fall, our agency took an important first step in ensuring we have the data necessary to get an accurate view of the scope of the problem by updating and improving the information we collect when operators apply for a flaring exception. Over the next several months, our staff will be able to take this information and evaluate the best way forward to address this issue without destroying the economics of energy production and putting small independent operators out of business. Maybe the answer is, as the Environmental Defense Fund suggests, a 98% gas capture policy. Maybe it is something else we haven't even seen proposed yet. But whatever the answer may be, our agency will rely on sound science and an objective look at the data before deciding what that solution is.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 31st, 2021, Life and Times. Community Art Day. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Jennifer De La Garza and her son Ezekiel, 4, watch as UTPB junior Claribel Olivas screen prints a design onto face masks during the Community Art Day Saturday afternoon at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. Associate Professor of Art Chris Stanley shows the Rodriguez family how to make hearts out of clay. From left, Piper McGuire, 8, Lizette Armendariz, 10, Nora Armendariz, and Virginia Holmes watch as Yvonne Asakawa shows them various Valentine's Day cards. Basin PBS Education Director Danielle Castle hands out goodie bags filled with educational materials to patrons as they take part in the Community Art Day. UTPB junior Clarabelle Olivas applies ink to a screen printing machine as she and other UTPB classmates make Ellen Noel face masks. Master Gardeners, Prolific Bloomers, Give Cosmos a Try This Year by Jesse Clark, Master Gardener. Do you enjoy fresh cut flowers from your garden? Give Cosmos a try this year. Cosmos are prolific bloomers that come in several varieties, ranging from fluted tubular petals to double-flowered beauties. Some look as quaint as daisies. Native to Mexico and South America, these summer bloomers are touted to be the best annual for hot, dry locations and even thrive in poor soil. Some grow as tall as 7 feet, while other dwarf varieties remain knee-high. Cosmos attract pollinators, including bees and butterflies. To begin, identify which variety of Cosmo you'd like to grow and secure the seeds. The Cosmos sulfurius species is an excellent one to start with for first-timers and highly recommended on the Permian Basin Master Gardener plant list. These are yellow, orange, or red with narrow lobes and long leaves. The Cosmos bipinnatus species will range from white to all shades of pink and have more fine capillaceous leaves. My personal favorites are the Seashells mix and Versailles mix. Sow your seeds indoors in March and then transplant to a full sun area of your garden in April, after the last danger of frost. Cosmos seeds can also be directly sown after last frost. For avid cut flower gardeners,